Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Story one, I don't spook easily. I'm 33, live alone, and work overnight shifts at a gas station outside of Fresno. But what happened 3 years ago at my mom's place still messes with my head. I don't talk about it much. People either laugh or start asking if I've seen a therapist. I know what I saw, I know what I felt, and if you'd seen it, really seen it, you'd sleep with your lights on too. My mom was going to Palm Springs with her sisters for the week and asked me to house sit. Just feed the cats, water a couple of plants, and bring the trash bins in. Nothing complicated. She lives in a quiet, older neighborhood in Clovis. No crime, lots of retirees, big oak trees, real Norman Rockwell stuff. She has two cats, Ginger and Merlin. Old, chubby, lazy. They mostly stayed indoors, but there's a cat flap on the back door so they can come and go. I stayed in her guest room, set up my laptop, brought some takeout and groceries. I didn't mind the peace and quiet. That Tuesday night, I was watching something on Netflix when I realized I hadn't seen either cat all day. The food bowl was full. Normally, Ginger would be bugging me for treats or curling up on my lap. I called out for them, Ginger! Merlin! But no jingling collars, no little meows, nothing. I figured maybe they were curled up in the garage or on one of the beds upstairs. Cats are weird like that. It was around 2:15 a.m. when I heard the meowing. It wasn't a cute little, let me in meow. It was loud, strained, almost panicked, and it was coming from downstairs, like someone cranked up the volume on a single desperate cat over and over. I sat up straight, muted the TV, listened. Another meow, then two more, layered on top of each other, then more. Not overlapping like a group of cats meowing together, more like someone was copying the same sound, stacking it, repeating it. I grabbed my phone, turned on the flashlight, and headed downstairs. Ginger, I called. Merlin? The living room was empty. I checked behind the couch, under the coffee table. Still hearing it, meow, 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 but it was coming from the front hallway, the kind of long, narrow hall you see in older houses with that yellowy light that never feels bright enough. When I opened the hallway door, I froze. There were cats, black cats, just sitting there, at least 15 of them, all the same size, all completely black, not tuxedo cats or tabbies, just solid black, no collars, all sitting perfectly still, staring at me, not blinking, not moving, just watching. And they were all meowing in unison, not chaotic, not random. One long droning meow, like a siren, like they were practicing something, like they knew how to do it together. I didn't move. I felt like if I made a sound or stepped forward, something would happen. Not like they'd scratch me, but something worse. Something I couldn't name. I whispered, what the hell? Then I heard a thump behind me, just one. I spun around, nothing. Looked back down the hallway. All the cats were standing now, still staring. And then they parted, like they were making room for something behind them. I couldn't see anything at first, just shadows in the front door at the end of the hall. Then something stepped forward, slow, quiet. It didn't make a sound. It moved like it was gliding. I thought it was another cat at first, but it was taller. It was standing. I only saw it for a second before I slammed the hallway door shut and stumbled backward, almost falling into the coffee table. I locked the door. Locked the back door. I was shaking so bad my hands weren't working right. I backed into the guest room, shut the door, locked it, pushed a dresser in front of it. I stayed up the rest of the night with the lights on, clutching the phone. No footsteps, no more meows. Just silence. By morning, I finally worked up the nerve to check. The hallway was empty. No black cats, no footprints, no scratched up doors. Ginger and Merlin were sitting by their food bowls like nothing had happened, like they hadn't been missing, like they never left. I never told my mom. I didn't want her thinking I was on something. I finished the week without sleeping properly, kept all the doors locked, and left the lights on all night. She got back Sunday, and I handed off the keys and left without saying much. I haven't been back to that house since. Story 2. I never liked the layout of the place. It was one of those narrow duplexes with a long hallway straight down the middle, every room feeding off it like a spine with ribs. Cheap mid-century build, creaky floors, hollow doors. But rent was cheap and I needed quiet that summer. My roommate was gone for an internship, so I had the whole thing to myself for 3 months. The first week was fine. I was nervous at night, sure. I've always been jumpy, but nothing happened. I double-checked locks like a ritual. Front door, back sliding glass, all windows. I even wedged a broomstick under the sliding door handle. Maybe overkill, but I was a woman living alone, and I didn't want to be careless. It was late July when it happened. I remember because it had been brutally hot all week. That night I couldn't sleep. Not heat-related, just restless. I'd stayed up reading on the couch in the living room. Lights dimmed. Windows shut tight. AC rattling. It was 2:03 a.m. when I finally decided to go to bed. I remember the time because I glanced at the microwave clock in the kitchen as I passed by. So I went through my routine. Lights off. Locked the front door. Again. Walked down the hallway to my bedroom, shut the door, locked that too. I don't usually lock the bedroom door, but something felt off. Not fear exactly, but a prickly, watch your back kind of energy. I figured maybe the true crime podcast I'd listened to earlier had gotten in my head. I left my phone charging on the nightstand and tried to fall asleep. I must have dozed off for 10 or 15 minutes before I realized I was awake again. Not fully conscious, just that in-between fog where your body's still, but your mind is kicking around. That's when I heard it. Three slow creaks from the floorboards in the hallway. Not the usual house-settling sounds. These were deliberate, spaced, close. Creak. 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 I froze. Every muscle in my body locked up. I wasn't dreaming. I was awake. I was hearing someone or something walking down my hallway. I didn't move, didn't breathe. My bedroom door was closed, locked. But it's a cheap interior door. If someone pushed, it would give. Another step, closer. The floor outside my room always groaned when stepped on, right in front of the door. Creak. That one made my eyes water. I stared at the door, expecting to see the knob turn. It didn't. Just silence now. Complete, dead silence. Even the AC had stopped. I reached slowly under my pillow. I kept a small flashlight and a box cutter there. The flashlight felt cold in my hand. I didn't turn it on. I just gripped the handle of the box cutter and waited. Still silence. Then, this part I can barely explain, there was a soft knock. Not loud, not rushed. Just tap. I choked down whatever sound tried to come out of me. I didn't say anything. I didn't move. I just sat there, hands shaking around the box cutter, breath held so long my chest burned. I kept thinking, do I call 911? But what would I say? I heard a floorboard and a knock. Tap. Again. Same spot. Like someone just lightly touched the door with their finger. Not impatient. Not threatening. Just testing. I forced myself to inch toward the edge of the bed. My phone was maybe 3 feet away, just beyond reach. I didn't want to make any noise grabbing it, but I knew I needed it. I slid off the mattress, feet touching the carpet, every inch of my body straining not to let the floor creak. I got to the nightstand and took the phone. Screen still lit up. It was 2:37 a.m., I texted my dad. He lived 3 hours away, but I didn't know who else to message. Someone's in the house. Seconds passed. Then something shifted on the other side of the door. I could hear it. This dragging sound like a palm across the wood. Then a very low, audible inhale. Long, purposeful. It was right there, breathing in through the gap beneath my door. I didn't know people could breathe that quietly and still make it sound wrong. This wasn't panicked breathing. This was slow, controlled, curious. Then it stopped. Not gradually, just gone. No more breathing, no more creaking, nothing. I didn't move. Not for 10, maybe 20 minutes. I just crouched there listening. My phone buzzed once. Dad replying, "Call 911, now." I wanted to. I really did. But I didn't want to speak. I was afraid if I even whispered, it'd hear me again. Eventually, I built up enough nerve to unlock the bedroom door. My plan was simple. Throw it open, sprint to the front door, and get out. I counted to three, threw the lock, yanked the door. The hallway was empty. No one, no thing, nothing out of place. But the front door, deadbolt still latched, was wide open. I stared at it for a full minute, not understanding. The chain lock was hanging, not broken, just unlatched. That made no sense. I'd locked it before bed. I was sure. I ran for it, didn't even put on shoes, just bolted barefoot into the parking lot and called 911 from the sidewalk. An officer showed up 10 minutes later, did a full sweep. Nobody in the house. No signs of forced entry, no footprints, no damage, nothing. They chalked it up to maybe me forgetting to lock it. Maybe the wind, they said. Even though the door doesn't open without a hard push, and the handle had to turn for it to open at all. I didn't sleep there again, packed a bag and stayed with a friend until my lease was up. I never figured it out. Story 3. I never used to be scared of being alone. I actually liked it. Still do most of the time. But what happened that night in 1976, in the middle of the bush suburbs outside Sydney, made me realize how fast silence can turn on you. I was 14. My parents and younger siblings had driven off to visit my aunt, and I'd opted to stay behind. I had the whole place to myself, which meant books, toast for dinner, and no one yelling about bedtime. It was already dark, maybe close to 9 p.m., and I was stretched out on my bed with a flashlight and one of those Hardy Boys paperbacks. Then I heard something. It was faint at first. Just a rustling sound, like fabric moving or a whisper from another room. I froze mid-sentence and clicked off the flashlight. No TV was on, no radio. The house had gone quiet except for that sound. Steady and low. Not random, not wind. I sat up holding my breath. You ever have that feeling where your gut turns cold before your brain catches up? That's what hit me. I knew, absolutely knew that something was wrong. Not imagined wrong. Real, physical, someone in the house wrong. I eased out of bed slowly. Door already open, thankfully. It creaked like hell when it moved. Out in the hallway, the sound got sharper. I could make it out now. Voices, not loud, not shouting, arguing. Two people, whispering, almost. Fast and intense, like they were trying not to wake someone. There was no one else home. The voices were coming from the kitchen, but I couldn't see it from where I stood. I'd have to go through the living room. I stood there dead still for a long time, maybe 5 minutes, listening. My brain ran in circles trying to make sense of it. Was someone hiding? Had someone broken in? But why would they be arguing like that? Eventually, I decided I had to look. If I didn't, I'd just end up standing there all night or bolting into the bush barefoot like an idiot. I crept down the hallway, bare feet, soft steps, my heart pounding so loud I was afraid they might hear it. I leaned just enough to see into the living room. Empty. But the voices were clearer now. Still arguing. One of them snapped, "You're not listening to me!" And the other hissed something I couldn't catch. No one was there. I felt my scalp tighten. I stepped in, crouching low, keeping to the wall, eyes scanning every shadow. I moved like I was invisible. Like if I even breathed too loud, they'd come rushing out. The kitchen was just around the next corner. I got to the edge and leaned in just enough to peek. Kitchen was empty. No one by the fridge. No one near the door. just the sound of those two voices, loud and pissed off. One of them said clear as day, "We've been through this. He's not going to listen." And I swear to God, I almost pissed myself. I stood there shaking, not moving, not blinking. I whispered to myself, "There's nobody here. There's nobody here." But the voices kept going, overlapping now, urgent and angry. I didn't believe in ghosts. I didn't even believe in God. But I also couldn't explain how two invisible people were arguing in my kitchen. I forced myself to move, just a step, then another, breathing through my mouth. I followed the sound slowly, cautiously, until I realized it was coming from the stove. Not near the stove, inside it. Back then, we had one of those old electric coil top stoves. No flat surface, just open coils. I crouched down, ears inches from it, and froze. The voices were coming from the metal, clearer now. Male voices, fast-paced, like a talk show. They weren't arguing anymore. They were debating something, some political issue, maybe religion. I remember one of them saying something about the minister's position being contradictory. I stayed there, crouched like an idiot, listening to a goddamn radio show inside our stove. I got up, backed away, and leaned against the wall, heart still racing. That was it. That was the whole thing. No ghost, no burglars, just disembodied voices coming from a stove coil. When my family came home later that night, I dragged my siblings into the kitchen and made them listen. Sure enough, if you pressed your ear to the metal ring just right, you could hear the same thing. Some AM frequency was getting picked up through the wiring or something. My dad laughed, said he'd heard of that happening sometimes with old electronics. Didn't matter. For a solid half hour that night, I believed, fully believed, that I was not alone in that house, that there were people hiding just out of sight, that something terrible was about to happen. I'm 55 now. I've seen some shit. But that night still makes my skin crawl when I think about it. Story 4. I'd never planned on living in a basement, but when you're broke and in school, you take what you can get. A friend of mine, Mike, told me his parents were renting out the bottom unit of their split-level home. It wasn't much, just a long, narrow hallway, three rooms, a kitchenette, and a shared bathroom. But it was cheap and close to campus. The house was in Skokie, quiet neighborhood, kind of old-school suburban. His family was first-gen Filipino, really kind people. They were upstairs in the main house, and I was in apartment B in the basement, with two other tenants who came and went on weird shifts. The place had a weird layout, like someone added rooms as an afterthought. My room was at the very back, right next to the furnace closet. It was a Friday night, mid-October. I remember because I had a midterm due online, and I was trying to get it wrapped up before midnight. Both my roommates were out. One was a nurse, the other was a night security guard, so I had the basement to myself. I was sitting on my bed, earbuds in, typing out the last section of my essay, when I noticed something weird. I had paused my music to reread a paragraph and realized it sounded like people walking upstairs. A lot of people. Not just footsteps. Chatter, bursts of laughter, and the dull thud of movement, like dancing or stomping. It was muffled but clear enough to make out that there were a lot of voices. It wasn't alarming at first. Mike's family was big on get-togethers. Someone always had a birthday or reunion going on. But the thing was, no one had come home. I hadn't heard any doors slam upstairs all day. I hadn't heard the driveway fill up like usual when they had guests. Still, I figured, maybe I was wrong. So I shot Mike a text. "Yo, you guys having a party? LOL, it sounds like you're stomping on the ceiling." About a minute later, he replied, "We're not home. We're in Wisconsin till Sunday, remember?" I just stared at the screen. My stomach tightened. I stood up and walked to the hallway. The noise was still going. Not quiet, not faint, full on walking, like a dozen people above me. The floorboards creaked in a rhythm, like someone was pacing the living room, then someone else stomping behind them. I heard what sounded like a chair being dragged. I texted again, "Are you 100% sure no one's in the house?" Mike replied almost immediately, "Yeah, dude. My parents, aunts, everyone's here. Why?" Now I was standing in the middle of the basement, under the main stairwell, staring up. The noise shifted again, footsteps above me, then what sounded like someone running hard, once across the living room, then nothing. Dead silence. Just like that. I didn't move. I didn't breathe. It was too sudden, too deliberate. I felt like if I moved, they, or whatever was up there, would know. I crept to the back door of the basement, which led out to the side of the house. I pushed it open and stepped out into the cold air. The street was dead quiet. No cars in the driveway. No porch light on. All the windows upstairs were dark. I walked out to the sidewalk and looked up at the house. Still no lights. Still no cars. That's when I realized something else. No music. No voices anymore. No party. But I'd heard it. Loud. Right above me. Clear as day. My hands were actually shaking. I called Mike. "Can you check your Ring camera?" I asked. He was quiet for a second. Then he said, "We didn't arm it. Left it off this weekend so my uncle could feed the dog on Sunday." I didn't know what to say. I just kept walking. I didn't go back inside. I walked 2 blocks, then sat at a Dunkin' Donuts until 11 p.m. when one of my roommates got off work and came home. I didn't tell him what happened right away. I just said I wanted to hang out for a bit and asked if he could help me check something in the ceiling. We went upstairs together. The house was locked. Everything was dark, silent. We opened the door to the main level, stepped inside, and did a quick walkthrough. Living room, kitchen, bedrooms, nothing. No mess, no signs of anyone having been there. No lights left on, no drinks, no chairs moved. But here's the part that freaked me out most. In the dining room, there were fresh footprints on the hardwood floor, bare feet, several of them. And they were small, like kids' feet. There were no kids living in that house, and no kids visiting. We left immediately and locked up. I stayed at my cousin's place that night. I moved out the next month. Story 5, and I moved into the flat above the hardware store in Morro Bay 3 months ago. It's a small place, just one bedroom, a creaky living room with windows that face the bay, and a weirdly narrow bathroom with a radiator wedged under a floating shelf. I live alone. That was the whole point. After my divorce, I didn't want to see anyone's face first thing in the morning. I didn't want to talk. I just wanted silence. The shells were my mother's. She collected them when we used to go down to the tide pools on weekends, carefully like they were evidence or sacred artifacts. They're not rare or valuable, just memories. I arranged them on that shelf my first weekend in the flat. Lined up neatly, maybe too neatly, like they were being presented. 7 of them, all small enough to fit in my palm. Each with a little tag I wrote describing where we'd found them. Last Tuesday, I came home after a 12-hour shift at the marina office. I was tired, but nothing felt off. The door was locked, lights off, just like I'd left them. I dropped my keys in the bowl, kicked off my boots, and went straight to the bathroom. That's when I saw them. All 7 shells were sitting in the sink. Not cracked, not chipped. Just sitting there, arranged in the same order I'd put them on the shelf. But they weren't touching each other. Each shell sat in its own little spot, evenly spaced like they'd been placed carefully, deliberately, like someone had taken their time. I stared for maybe a full minute before I said anything. Then, out loud, like an idiot, I said, "What the hell?" There's no window in the bathroom, just that high vent that doesn't even work right. The shelf they were on? It's not directly above the sink. It's on the left wall, about a foot away, and the radiator's under it, metal, rounded and hot even in the spring because the old landlord won't fix the damn boiler timer. If the shells had fallen, they would have bounced off that and hit the tile. They'd have broken. Some of them are thin as paper. One spiral is so sharp it cracked just from being packed in a shoebox when I moved. But these, they were perfect. I reached in and picked one up, the little orange cockle shell from San Simeon. Dry, like it had been sitting there all day. I looked around the room. Nothing else was touched. Toothbrush still in its cup. Towel on the hook. The shelf was empty except for a little Ring dish and a half-used candle. "Someone's messing with me," I said. I tried to believe it. I checked the door again. Still locked from the inside. I even tested the deadbolt. No windows were open. I walked through every room. Nothing missing. Nothing moved. And then this thought started worming its way in. I didn't feel alone in there. It's hard to explain. The place was silent, sure, but not quiet. Like someone was breathing just out of sight. The air felt wrong. too still but heavy, like if I turned around fast enough, I'd catch something slinking just past the doorframe. I turned on every light in the flat, left them all blazing while I made a cup of tea with hands that wouldn't stop shaking. I kept trying to find a reason. Maybe the shelf shook somehow, but nothing else fell. Maybe I bumped it leaving for work, but I hadn't even been in the bathroom that morning. Maybe an animal? But the vents covered in rusted slats, and I'd have heard a rat scraping around in there. I poured the tea down the drain and went to pick the shelves up again. This time I held each one a little longer. There was something about them that felt off. Not dirty, not cold, just wrong. Like they weren't mine anymore. Like they'd been handled by someone else. Someone who didn't want to hurt them. Someone who wanted them arranged in that sink for a reason. I left them there. I don't know why. I just couldn't bring myself to move them again. I slept on the couch that night. Not that I actually slept. I left the bathroom light on, and every time I closed my eyes, I imagined hearing the soft tick of something being set gently on porcelain. I told a friend the next day. She laughed, said it was probably vibrations from a truck outside, but she didn't come over to see. No one has. I haven't invited anyone up since I moved in. The next morning, they were still there, in the sink, in the same order. I finally put them back on the shelf, one at a time, hands shaking, whispering to no one, "Just stay. Please, just stay." They haven't moved since. I keep checking several times a day now. I stare at them longer than I should, waiting. But that feeling, the one like someone's watching me from the corner of the room, it hasn't left. It's not constant, but it's always nearby. Like something is waiting, like the shells were just the start. And I know how it sounds, I do. I don't believe in ghosts, I don't. I never have. But I know what I saw. I know what I felt in that room. And I know those shells didn't fall. They were placed, carefully, intentionally. I haven't slept in my bed since. Story 6. I've never really liked being in the house alone, but when you grow up in a working-class suburb just outside of Pittsburgh, you get used to it. Parents work late, siblings come and go, you learn to be alone. Still, what happened that day wasn't something you prepare for. It wasn't a ghost or some dramatic horror movie scene. It was worse. It was real. I was 16, a junior in high school, and it was late fall. I remember that because the air felt sharp when I opened the door after softball practice, and the sun was already gone by the time I kicked my cleats off. The house was dark, quiet except for my dog Harley's nails tapping across the hardwood as he greeted me. Everyone else was at work. My older sister Erin usually got back around 8 from her bartending job. She lived with us, technically in the little basement apartment with its own side entrance, but she used the upstairs kitchen and bathroom most of the time. I grabbed a bag of chips and collapsed onto the couch in front of the TV. Harley curled up at my feet. Everything was normal, boring even, but maybe 20 minutes in, I heard it. Slam, a door, heavy, not the front or back, no rattling in the frame, but sharp and sudden. My stomach kind of tightened, but I didn't jump. It wasn't alarming. It sounded like the basement door. Erin must have come home early, I figured. Harley jumped up and took off down the stairs, nails skidding against the wood. "Erin!" I called out, but I didn't hear anything back. Just the TV buzzing behind me. I figured she'd say hi once she dropped her stuff off downstairs. Maybe she was on the phone or something. I went to the bathroom, still not thinking much of it. But after I washed my hands, I realized something weird. Harley hadn't come back. Normally, if he didn't get attention after a few minutes, he'd be pawing at me. Or he'd bring a toy and just drop it at my feet until I threw it. But it was too quiet, and Erin never came up either. I walked over to the window in the living room, mostly out of instinct, and that's when I saw Harley. My heart sank. He was outside, loose, sprinting up and down the street like he was looking for something. I remember standing there frozen for a second because, how? How was he outside? I had locked the front door behind me. The back door was bolted. He doesn't open doors. There was only one way he could have gotten out. The basement. I ran downstairs two steps at a time, calling for him. Harley! Harley! The basement door was cracked open. The lights were off. I flipped the switch and stopped dead. The side entrance, Aaron's entrance, was wide open. I don't mean unlocked, I mean gaping. The cold air was pouring in, leaves blowing in across the carpet, and Harley was nowhere down there. He must have chased someone out. Someone had been inside. I felt it, even before my brain put it together. That slam I heard, that wasn't Aaron coming home. That was someone leaving, fast, because they heard the TV, because they heard Harley. There was this smell in the basement, not quite body odor, not quite mold. Just wrong, like sweat and wet clothes. I walked slowly toward the door, holding my breath, half expecting someone to lunge at me from behind it. But there was no one, just the wind in the open dark. I shut the door and locked it with shaking hands. Deadbolt, chain, everything. Then I locked the door between the basement and the main house too. I didn't go looking for Harley right away. I couldn't. I just stood there against the kitchen counter, heart pounding so hard I felt it in my teeth. My phone was upstairs in my room, so I forced myself up there, one careful step at a time, checking corners like I was in a horror movie. I called my mom first, no answer. Then Aaron, nothing. I called animal control, but Harley came back on his own before they even showed up, barking like crazy at the front door, tail between his legs. I don't know how long I stood there with my hand on the doorknob, not sure whether to let him in. I was scared out of my mind, not because of some ghost or shadow or weird noise, because someone had been in our house. They opened a door and came inside and realized someone was home. Then they ran, that's all. But it changed everything. We got a security system installed the next week. Aaron moved out a couple months later. She said it was because of her new job, but I knew she was freaked out. So was I. That door stayed locked after that. We didn't use the basement unless someone else was home. The cops never found anything. No forced entry. Nothing missing. Probably just someone casing the place, they said. Maybe thought no one was home and tried their luck. But that didn't explain the timing. That didn't explain the door slamming just after I got inside. That didn't explain the smell in the basement or how Harley got outside when the side door opened inward. Someone had to push it from inside. Story 7. I was 22 when I first lived alone. It was a one-bedroom unit tucked behind someone's house in a quiet residential block in Modesto. I was finishing my last semester at community college and working nights at a liquor store. The place was nothing fancy. Old carpet, off-white walls, barely enough space for a futon and a desk. But it was mine. And after years of roommates and thin walls, the silence felt like luxury. Until it didn't. It started with a knock. I'd been up late working on a paper. I remember because it was due the next day, and I had caffeine shakes from too many gas station coffees. It was almost 2:30 a.m., and I was deep in this weird flow state, earbuds in, zoning out to some ambient synth stuff on YouTube. Then I felt it. Not heard it. Felt it. A single knock at the back door, the one that led to the tiny concrete yard behind the unit. It was dull, just one solid thump, like someone hit the wood with the side of their fist. I froze, took one butt out. Silence. I told myself it was probably nothing. Tree branch, possum, wind. I forced myself back into the screen. Then it happened again. This time it was slower. Three knocks. Methodical. Heavy. I paused the video. My place didn't have a peephole, and the way the kitchen was set up, I couldn't just peek around the corner without standing full view in the doorway. I stood there for a few seconds, heart thudding, trying to listen. Hello? It wasn't loud. It was just close. It came from right outside the back door. A woman's voice. Very calm. Almost too calm. Is someone in there? I didn't say anything. I didn't move. I couldn't. She spoke again. I need help. Please, I just need to use your phone. Still calm, almost rehearsed, I backed up slowly. My phone was already in my hand, so I pulled up the camera app and crept toward the kitchen window. It was above the sink and faced the little yard, but because of the overgrown shrubs, you couldn't see much except the edge of the concrete. I lifted the phone just high enough to peek through the glass and took a quick video, watched it back. No one. Nothing. I waited, holding my breath. After a minute, I turned on the porch light. The motion sensor didn't click on. I leaned closer and looked again. Still nothing. I didn't sleep that night. I stayed on the couch with every light on, heart racing at every creak and shift of the house. By the time the sun came up, I had convinced myself it was someone drunk or high who'd wandered into the wrong yard. I was exhausted, but I went to class anyway. Told a couple friends about it and laughed it off, kind of. You ever tell a story and try to sound chill while your gut's still turning? I came home late that night after work. I was still too creeped out to turn off the lights, so I just let them stay on as I dragged myself to bed. Sometime past 3 a.m., I woke up to the sound of the door handle jiggling. Not the front one, the back door, the same one from the night before. This wasn't knocking, this was turning. I froze under the covers, ears straining. Then she said it again. Hello? Same voice, calm, too calm. Is someone in there? I just need help, please. I sat up and grabbed my phone, already dialing 911. But before I could press call, the voice spoke again, this time closer, almost like it was coming through the window above my bed. You can hear me. I know you can. I lost it. I sprinted out of bed and into the living room, ready to bolt out the front door. But I stopped cold when I realized something. The windows were closed. Every window, every door. And my backyard? It was surrounded by a 6-foot wooden fence with no gate. There was no way someone could have gotten in unless they climbed over. And even then, how did they know where my bedroom was? I stood there barely breathing, heart pounding so hard it made my vision pulse. Then, silence. No more voice, no more handle. Nothing. I waited a few more minutes, called the police, and told them someone was trying to break in. They sent a patrol car about 20 minutes later. The cop walked around with a flashlight, checked the fence line, the windows, the doors. Nothing was broken, no footprints, no sign anyone had been there at all. He asked me if I had a fight with someone, an ex maybe. I told him no. He told me to lock up and call again if anything else happened. That was the last time I heard her. But here's the thing that still makes my skin crawl, even now, 2 years later. About a week after it happened, I got a knock on the front door, middle of the day. It was my neighbor, the old guy who lived in the main house in front of my unit. He asked if everything was all right. I asked him why. He told me his dog had been acting weird the week before. Refused to go outside at night, kept growling at the backyard fence. He said he thought maybe there were coyotes coming in, but he hadn't seen any. Then he said this, "You didn't see that woman in your yard? The one in the white shirt?" I just stared at him. He said he thought maybe it was one of my friends, but he only saw her once, standing still in the yard behind my unit, just past the porch light's reach. She was looking straight up at my window, my bedroom window. He didn't call the cops because she was gone before he could get a better look. I moved out a few weeks later. Couldn't shake the feeling she was still out there. I don't know what she was or what she wanted. Story 9. I never used to get nervous being alone. Even after I lost my job at the zoo in late 2015, when I moved in with my grandparents for a few months, I actually liked the quiet. Their place is tucked into the edge of a tree-heavy suburb just outside Bellingham, Washington. Pretty enough, but with those thick woods right behind the house, it gets dark in a way that's different from the city. Like can't see your own hands kind of dark. My grandpa worked graveyard shifts at the post office, and my grandma was in Texas for a month visiting my aunt. So it was just me and their two tiny dogs, Tinkerbell and Moose. Tink's a yappy white Pomeranian, and Moose is a Chihuahua mix who shakes like he owes someone money. I was basically there to feed them, walk them, and make sure they didn't freak out from being alone all night. It was a Wednesday night, cold, damp. I remember because I'd just come in from walking them and my jeans were soaked at the cuffs. I fed the dogs, double-checked the doors, then decided to take a long bath upstairs. It was the only thing keeping me from spiraling, hot water and silence. The bathroom has a skylight directly above the tub. You can lie back and look straight up into the trees, and even though the glass is fogged from condensation and a bit of age, you can still make out shapes if anything moves past it. I'd been in the water maybe 15 minutes. No music, no phone, just staring up through the skylight, zoning out. That's when I heard it. Not footsteps, not banging, just voices, low, whispering, like two people were standing right outside on the back porch, trying not to be heard. I sat up fast, the water sloshing. I froze, holding my breath. It kept going, little bursts of hushed speech. Definitely a man and a woman, not laughing, not arguing, just talking, intensely. But there was something off about it. It wasn't like overhearing neighbors. It was too deliberate, too close. Then both dogs downstairs erupted. I mean, full-blown barking, losing their damn minds. I've heard them bark at squirrels, delivery drivers, even their own reflections. But this was panicked, shrill and deep all at once. That's when my stomach dropped. I didn't even dry off properly. I yanked on a sweatshirt, still soaking wet underneath, and grabbed the shovel I kept in the laundry room for clearing the back steps. The porch lights were on, flickering a little like they always do when it's damp. But when I pulled open the sliding glass door, there was no one there. Nothing. Just the wind moving the trees and the dogs whining behind me like they wanted nothing to do with the yard. But here's the part I still don't like thinking about. As I stepped onto the porch, shovel in hand, I realized something. Something I hadn't considered in the panic. There's no way to get onto that porch from the outside without making a noise. It's raised with a heavy wooden gate that sticks every time you open it, and the gravel path up to it crunches like stepping on broken glass. I would have heard someone coming up. I would have definitely heard them leave, but the gate was still latched. The gravel hadn't shifted, and the whispering, I'd heard it through the skylight, which means they were on the roof or in the trees. I stood there barefoot, dripping, shovel clenched so tight my hand cramped. The cold didn't even register. I kept thinking maybe someone had climbed up for some reason, maybe even a messed up prank. But there were no footsteps in the wet leaves, no broken branches, nothing disturbed. Eventually I circled the house, nothing. Not even deer tracks, just silence. The kind that feels like it's waiting for something. I stayed up that night with all the lights on. The dogs pressed against my legs like they knew something I didn't. When my grandpa came home at 4 a.m., I told him what happened. He looked out at the yard through the kitchen window, chewing on the inside of his cheek like he always does when he's trying not to say something. Then he goes, "You didn't leave the porch light on earlier, right?" I shook my head. "No, why?" He didn't answer for a second, just turned the kettle on and said, "Sometimes when your grandma's away, I hear voices in the trees out back. Always real low, like they're just watching. Never sticks around long." I asked him why he never mentioned it. He just looked at me and said, "Would you have believed me if I did?" I never took another bath there. Ever. Story 10. I grew up just outside Madison, Wisconsin. Not out in the sticks, but far enough that the bus ride to school took 25 minutes, and you could hear coyotes some nights. My parents' house was a 1970s split level with this finished basement. My brother and I turned into a gaming zone. Laminate plank floors, an old couch, and a fat box TV with a busted corner that still worked fine if you smacked it just right. You ever drop a PlayStation controller on laminate? That sharp, plasticky clatter? It's unmistakable. Hard and hollow and fast. We'd both done it a million times. The sound sticks with you. It happened when I was in ninth grade. One of those weird gray winter afternoons where the sun sets before 5 and the whole house feels like it's holding its breath. I got home before everyone else. Mom worked late on Tuesdays and my brother had wrestling practice. I remember throwing my backpack down, microwaving leftover lasagna, and parking myself in front of the TV upstairs. Nothing fancy, just a quiet house and garbage reruns playing over dinner. I'd been sitting there maybe 20 minutes when I heard it. That noise, a controller hitting the laminate floor in the basement. It was fast, loud, and exact. I froze with my fork halfway to my mouth. I remember how quiet it got after. No creaking, no voices, just that initial thud echoing in my head and this tight, horrible silence. I knew I was alone. I hadn't heard the garage open. No one else had a key. And even if someone had broken in, why the hell would they be playing PlayStation? My stomach dropped. I waited. I listened. I don't know what I was expecting. Maybe for it to happen again, or for someone to come up the stairs. But nothing happened. I don't know what came over me. I wasn't the brave type. I never got in fights. I wasn't built like my brother. But in that moment, something kicked in. I think it was more like denial than courage. I needed it to be nothing. Needed to see with my own eyes that there wasn't anything to be scared of. So I got up, left my plate on the coffee table, walked toward the basement stairs with this pounding in my chest like I'd been running. I didn't grab a knife or anything. Just moved slow, trying not to make any noise on the old stairs that always creaked no matter how careful you were. I stood at the top, hand on the banister, just listening. Nothing. Still, I started down. Each step felt like stepping into ice water. When I got halfway, I could see the bottom. Dim light from the small window, well barely lit the floor. And that's when I saw it. One of the white vent covers from the drop ceiling was lying face up in the middle of the floor. Just sitting there. We'd had problems with them falling out before. Stupid round plastic covers that never fit right. The air pressure would pop them loose every now and then. It had happened during games before. Scared the hell out of us the first few times. That must have been what I heard. Had to be. But even thinking that, something felt off. Because the vent wasn't near anything. It was way across the room from where it should have fallen. I glanced up and the ceiling above didn't even have a hole. All the covers were in place. I looked back down at it. I swear to God, I was halfway through convincing myself it had somehow rolled when I saw it. A PlayStation controller. Lying next to the vent cover, one of our black DualShock 2s, cable still curled. It hadn't been there the last time I'd gone down. I was sure of that. We kept them in the entertainment center. No reason for it to be in the middle of the floor. And it wasn't just lying there like someone dropped it while playing. It was placed right next to the vent cover, parallel to it, like someone had set them both there on purpose. That's when I got the worst feeling I've ever had in my life. Like the room was watching me, like something was crouched just out of view, not breathing. I should have turned and run, but I didn't. Instead, I said out loud, like a total idiot, "Hello?" My voice came out thin and cracked, and then I heard it, a breath from inside the drop ceiling. Not the furnace kicking on, not pipes, a low, slow inhale, right above me, right behind the ceiling tiles. I froze. My legs wouldn't move. I was staring up now, straight at the tile nearest the vent still in place. And then, barely, just barely, I saw it shift. Like pressure. Like someone pressing a hand gently against it from the other side. That was it. I ran. I didn't even hit the stairs evenly. Just stumbled and clawed my way up. Slammed the basement door. Locked it. Stood there shaking with my hand still on the knob. I didn't go back down until my brother got home. When I told him, he thought I was messing with him. But when we went down together, the vent cover and controller were gone. Gone. We tore the place apart. Checked the ceiling tiles. Nothing. No sign of them. My mom got pissed when I brought it up later. She said we were stirring up nonsense and to stop trying to scare each other. But my brother never made fun of me for it again. We moved out of that house 2 years later. The basement was turned into a guest room. I never set foot in it alone again.